Podcast of the cinema. Who are you?
I barely even know. I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap, co-host of the Breakfast All Day and Who Shot You podcasts. And
who am I?
And you, sir, are Dave White, film critic for The Wrap, co-host of this podcast, my husband.
What's your story?
It's the story of a...
No, don't do that.
No.
No, okay. Start singing.
All right.
That's just for me.
Oh.
Singing is only for
really?
Me.
Really? Oh, yeah. Oh, I see.
Gonna, singing is my special romance.
You're
going to
Phil Spector me now?
No.
It's going to be just, I'm going to be trapped in this castle where I can only perform for you.
You. Singing is my special thing that you give me.
I have to share my gifts with the world.
No, you don't. No. It's mine.
I'm back from Venice.
You are.
Is a delight.
I'll tell you something. You made it get real hot again when you came home. And I wish I think you should go back to Italy.
Yeah.
Believe me. Get back on that plane where they put you in coach in the middle seat and then the guy moved out of his aisle seat to get away from you because you're fat.
That's just an assumption on my part.
No, it's
but
not
I'm
an assumption.
Pretty sure
my
that was
dearest,
his deal.
My dearest, most beautiful fat husband, that piece of ish did not want to sit next to a fat person on a plane.
Mm.
And that is why he got up and asked to move.
Yeah.
Now, is he an insulting dirtbag who should be killed? Yes. Did it give you a free seat next to you?
I got an aisle seat with an empty one next
That's
to me.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. So it's a
so,
win-win,
I mean,
really.
You if the cost of having this free seat next to you in a plane is a terrible person
watching
disdaining
Dutch privilege
you,
in action,
disdaining you because you're fat,
so be it.
Then I guess it's fine. Like,
no, I'll tell you, it is not. Even when it was hot here, it was not nearly as hot as it was.
No, I know.
In Italy, I pretty much every I would you know. I wore my shorts every day, which I didn't think I was going to, but like I would still wear a nice button-down shirt, you know, trying to look sort of professional.
Party up top. No, business up top.
Business up top, exactly.
Party down below.
And then I sweat through those shirts like nobody's business.
There ain't enough gelato in the world.
To keep you cool.
To make it. To turn your body into an actual air conditioner?
No. No.
It cannot be.
It cannot.
So, So you missed me terribly.
Totally.
While you were gone. And
you likewise, I'm sure.
After day three.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked a 3-day vacation from you.
Yes. Then the novelty wears off.
And then after that, I think, you could come back.
I'll allow it.
I've had... the only thing that is good about you being gone for a week, the one thing that's good about you being gone for the week, is tomatoes. Get to have them as often as I feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
And also hours at a time go by in a day's work where I don't speak to another human being. In fact, I'm only speaking to other human beings if the FedEx guy shows up and I say, thanks. Or I leave the house for some reason to go run an errand or to go off to a screening. And I did that several times. But there's something really beautiful about sitting here in the house, doing work, getting it done, zero interruptions, not having to talk to or listen to another human being.
I guess the same
thing. It recharges
kinda,
me.
It kind of happens with me, but to me, it feels sort of weird, you know?
Why?
Well,
you're not like me. You like people around you.
I guess.
More than I do.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I mean, there were other critics that I knew there, either people that we know from Los Angeles who were also there, or, you know, like Euro critics that I see at that festival.
Yeah.
And, you know, you run into them before screening or, you know, in the press room and you'll chat for a bit. But I wound up spending most of the time, like, kind of on my own schedule and doing my own thing. And so I don't talk to people. I don't interact with people a lot. And it gets, after a few days, it feels weird.
No, I love it. It makes me feel like I'm at a, like a power charging station.
Also, I realized,
I know you like, about 6 days in, you texted me and you were like, I don't like being alone here without you. Sorry, I'm putting you on blast with that.
You know, but it made me feel very lovely toward you, obviously. Gross about this, but I mean, there is that whole thing about, like, people who go without human touch, you know, and it's like, apart from the occasional handshake, like, that's pretty much all that's happening over there. And it's like, you know.
See, when you're here in the house,
yeah,
I'm all over you all the time.
It's true. So that's it's a shock to the system to be away from that.
I really do glom onto your body quite a bit. I'm always like,
but you, with consent.
Oh, you signed away your consent 24 years ago.
That's not true.
That's just how it is.
I just give you consent every time it happens.
Enthusiastically.
Sure.
Enthusiastically.
And luckily, like, I always have the terrible jet lag over there, but it does work out for the schedule that I have there.
Right.
Because, like, the important screenings all happen before noon.
Yeah.
Like, there's an 8 a.m. screening or an 8:30 screening, right, and an 11 screening. And those are, like, the big gala films of the day. And so then, like,
That's the one thing about that kind of film festival that I would like.
Yeah.
So, oh, like, 8 a.m., a breakfast movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get up. I have an early breakfast.
Did you eat the cold cuts?
I did eat the cold cuts.
What? Did you really?
Yes.
I can't deal with that.
It's a breakfast buffet.
I can eat leftover fried chicken for breakfast here, but I don't want cold cuts.
I'll have a plate with some the cold cuts is like prosciutto and, you know, like really good ham,
like,
and stuff.
Good stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
With, like, you know, nice, like, Swiss cheese or whatever.
All right.
Yeah, so that'll be one plate, and then I'll have, like, you know, a bowl with some muesli and some yogurt, and then maybe I'll have some toast with some Nutella on it.
I bought a whole box of Lucky Charms.
And then a hard-boiled egg and an orange,
mixing bowl.
Like, I do a breakfast where I don't eat again until dinner, basically, you know.
Right. And, that's very thrifty of you, and I appreciate it.
It is, and it also just, it's good for my day in general. I don't have to break it up with things. But yeah, so you see the big movies early in the morning, you get them written up, and then, like, if I sleep all afternoon, then I can still go to, like, a 7:30 or 8 o'clock screening of something else and write that up, and, you know. But yeah, as you have observed today, my sleeping hours are still kerwacky. To the point where it's not even like, oh, my body's still on Venice time. No, I woke up this morning at 1:30 p.m. Venice time. Yeah. I'm completely dissociated. I'm on Hong Kong time at this point, I think.
I saw a breakfast movie not while you were gone.
No, this weekend.
But this weekend. I saw a lot of movies while you were gone. We'll get to that.
Yes.
I saw the It Chapter 2.
Yes. At 8 a.m.
At 8:30 a.m. at the ArcLight Hollywood. And after we finished talking about It Chapter 2, which is the one film that both of us have seen.
Yes.
Then you can give your Venice report on the films you saw.
I'll give a short version.
And then
you can go to the wrap and read all my actual reviews.
Then I will give the Los Angeles report on what I saw.
Okay.
They had an 8 a.m. screening at the ArcLight. But, you see, it was in the Cinerama Dome.
Oh. You do not want to see a nearly 3-hour movie there.
I want to see special films the Dome.
If you want to see a film in actual Cinerama,
it's the place to go. But it's got to be, if I have no choice but to see a film in the Dome, I will see the film there. And as much as I love the structure itself, their seats are not fat man friendly.
No, they are not.
It's like being in that middle coach seat.
I think the last time I went to the Dome might have been when you and I went to see Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. That's how
I Long Halftime walked out of that.
Exactly. That's how much I like avoid the Dome if I can.
The seats are not comfortable. They're small and they're tightly spaced, and I'm not into it.
And it's very easy to be somewhere that is not a good angle.
Because the screen is so gigantic and curved. Unless you are dead smack center, in the middle,
you're like on the side of a bowl.
And then that means strangers are squozed right up next to you. All around you, front, back, side to side.
They want to be in the middle too.
You ain't want to be near all those strangers.
Yeah, no.
If you're me, ever. They're strangers. They are so named because they are. Lucky for me, that 8 a.m. screening, I couldn't have even gone to it if I wanted to, because it was about sold out.
Wow.
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
On a Saturday.
Pretty much. And there was an 8:30.
And that's why they have them, I guess.
There was an 8:30 in the theater itself, in the ArcLight proper.
And I guess also if you're showing a three-hour movie, you really do want to milk that thing for as much as possible, as many screenings as possible. So.
Right, right.
Were they round-the-clocking it, or?
No, just really early and really late. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I go, there are five other people in my theater.
Nice.
Which is perfect. I brought my own tea bag.
You're so excited about this. You act like you invented this.
It had never occurred to me that I could just bring my own tea bag with me to the ArcLight. Because when you walk in, where the lobby is, there's a little concession stand off to the left that's just coffee, tea, cookies, and muffins.
Yeah. And you didn't, it's not even like you got a bargain out of this. They charged you for tea.
No, yeah, they charged me for the hot water.
Yeah.
But I woke up that morning thinking,
really, you bought that tea twice.
I want my tea. I don't want the ArcLight tea. Their brand of tea is fine for after dinner, where they give you like mint. You can get mint tea or chamomile.
For your tummy.
For after dinner, right? But you want a breakfast tea? You want a nice, good cup of breakfast tea? They don't have a good kind there, really. It's weak. It's some brand. I don't know what brand it is. It's whatever. But
Le Crayon Brown?
But I brought my own tea bag with me. And I thought, I'm going to make him sell me a big cup of water, hot water, and then I'm going to put my own tea bag in it.
Make him. I demand that you charge me full price and give me less product.
I marched straight up to the counter and I said, I demand that you.
I will ask for a manager. Don't think I won't.
No, it's such a. I'm so stupid in my head because I thought, I wonder if it's okay. I wonder if it's allowed.
No, Dave, you must take our crappy tea.
Will they allow
it's
me
the
to
rules.
Put my own tea bag in the. In the thing, Yorkshire Gold.
I want
by
you
the
to
way.
Hold the chicken.
Yorkshire Gold. It's a strong black breakfast tea, and it's beautiful. It may be stealing me away from PG Tips.
Ooh,
yes, it's very smooth and malty.
Mm.
It's nice. Like, it has a flavor that I'm really into.
There's all these tea terms that I never know. Like, is it a builder's tea?
I don't know because I'm not British. Okay. But I have been told that my preferred way of making tea, which is lots of sugar and lots of half and half, is what people will often call builder's tea.
I see.
I don't know if that's accurate. If I have been told
Bob the Builder drink
I don't know what
tea?
Bob the Builder drinks. I do know that that is what someone who is actually British told me, that I like Builder's tea. Someone who you may correct me if I'm wrong or if I was told incorrectly.
You like negating all the actual health aspects of tea.
Oh, yeah. No, I just, all I want is that deliciousness in the morning. If I want health, I'll drink a green tea with nothing in it.
Yes, you will. I've seen you do it.
I got plenty of health already. Just look at me.
Your health runneth over.
Yeah. Spills over into the next seat, as a matter of fact. So the dude behind the counter was like, oh yeah, sure, no problem. And I was like, wow, it was so easy.
I've gotten away with
I'll be doing this nothing. Forever now. Got myself a blueberry muffin.
Did you demand to pay extra for that too?
I did. I said, you know what, young man, I'm going to tip you as well. That's what I'm going to do.
And you will not stop me.
And so I get in there, it's me and five other folks. That's the best way to see a movie. Nobody around you, no one bothering you. I'm on the back row all by myself, and I don't have to turn off my phone because there's no one around to see me check the time. And I did check the time.
Thing that one might need to do during it chapter two.
Handful of time.
Mm-hmm.
It chapter two is from director Andy Muschietti.
Muschietti.
Okay. He directed the first It.
Yes. He also did Mama, right?
He directed Mama, which is hilarious, and I recommend it. Which also stars Jessica Chastain.
Exactly, yeah.
If you have not seen the first It, then don't go see this one because you won't know what's going on. 27 years after the incidents of
the first film,
the 1980s, and the kids of the town of Derry, Maine, mm-hmm. been terrorized by a clown, a murder clown that lives in the sewers, eats you, eats children. That's cool. Is also the boyfriend of the Babadook.
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently in this movie he eats gays too.
He eats a gay straight off the bat. I did not know that I was going to, at 8:30 in the morning, witness such a brutal gay bashing.
Of Xavier Dolan.
Xavier Dolan, the Canadian, French-Canadian filmmaker, plays the gay who gets first gay bashed by humans.
Yes.
And then eaten by Pennywise. So you understand immediately that...
Pennywise was still mad about It's Only the End of the World.
Maybe Babadook broke up with him and he was upset. Don't know. But you understand immediately that this means, of course, I guess Pennywise is back.
Yes.
And can't find children to eat, has to go eating a gay.
Heck, if I... this is your classic, it was in the book moment. Like, mm-hmm. thematically, I don't know why.
Well, we forgot to have this discussion before we turned on the microphone. How much do we want to talk about
I think we can talk around this a bit. We can say that
I'm going to tell you thematically.
There are gay things in the movie. We're not going to tell you who.
There's
or
gay
why.
Stuff in the mirror in the movie
that's not in the book.
Is not in the book. That this initial sequence
mm-hmm.
sets a tone for in some ways.
I guess.
And so
I don't know that anyone in the audience needs to be reminded that, like, you know, coming out can be scary and right. the world can be awful for gay people.
Right. But
I'm glad we nailed that down in the mythos right. of It.
Yeah. all the kids are grown up. They are played by Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader,
James McAvoy.
James McAvoy. Isaiah Mustafa, who's the Old Spice guy. Jay Ryan, who I don't think I know. I've never seen him anything that I know
I kept
about.
Thinking he was
He's
like
from
two,
New Zealand.
I kept thinking he was two or three other people.
He was on Top of the Lake, apparently. Lots of Australian television and New Zealand television that I've never seen.
He was on Neighbours because it's the law.
Oh, was he really on Neighbours?
He was.
Okay. Again, this is everyone in Australia, every citizen of Australia
yes.
and New Zealand.
At some point, your lottery number comes
is
up.
Going to be on Neighbours.
Yes.
Yeah.
James Ransone, who I did not recognize, he was in Sinister.
Oh, I know him.
Oh, he was in Ken Park.
Yeah, I knew him, and then a new guy that I didn't know, a guy named Andy Bean, plays adult Stanley.
Yeah.
So, the character of Mike, played by Isaiah Mustafa, he calls everyone on the phone and says,
"You have to come back.
You have to come home." All agreed when we were children that if Pennywise came back, we would all come together. We would all meet back here, and we would kill him.
And significantly, Mike is the only one who stayed in town, and everyone else not only left Derry, but they all seem to have forgotten Derry until they come back, and then they sort of it all comes back to them.
Yes, it is made clear over the course of the film that their childhood memories of pretty much everything
are so traumatic
have been erased.
Yeah,
and it requires that they come back to Derry to remember the things they forgot, to remember who they were as children, what they wanted as children, what their troubles were as children.
How they feel about each other.
Yeah.
So, now, mind you, the kids from the first movie are in this movie quite a bit, in flashbacks and whatnot.
And in sequences where they interact with each other.
Yes.
The child version and the adult version, you know, coming together and doing things.
But the weird thing is that, of course, all the people from the previous movie are in the throes of adolescence.
Yeah.
So apparently they've all been CG'd to some extent or other to look like exactly like they did 2 years ago.
Oh, fascinating.
Because this is a very, you know, there's a lot happening in this particular 2 years for these guys.
Right.
So, So there are moments where you're like,
you know,
I never even stopped
to think about that.
Yeah,
the kids got youngified.
There was an article about this a couple of months
ago. That's really interesting.
And you know, obviously, it's been happening a lot. They've been doing it a lot with older movie stars.
Yes,
you know, like Michael Douglas in the Marvel movies, apparently Scorsese's The Irishman. There's a ton of it going on.
Right.
They're doing the anti Richard Linklater thing.
Right.
So that's a thing that's going on. So if you really miss those kids, you'll see them again.
I don't know how much I missed those kids. Because even though I enjoyed the first film, I wasn't drawn into it in a way that made me excited or anticipating this installment. So without pre-film enthusiasm on my part, just sort of like, okay, here's part two. I guess I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
I would have liked something different than what I was given.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's... I mean...
You go.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, like, is it just inherently less interesting to watch adults face their fears than it is to watch children, or to watch adults fight, or to watch children fight a killer sewer clown than it is to watch adults do it? But there's something about this movie where for a good chunk of it, I was kind of like, I'm not really into this and I don't super care. And then also I don't know. I think maybe in the first movie they do a better job of the kids operating as a group, whereas this one it's all about their separate individual lives.
Right.
So, like, for example, there's a moment where Mike tells them, you've all, like, buried some sort of totem of your past. You have to go back and find this thing that you've left behind.
Right.
And so it's like, so then we get...
Infinity Stones.
Yeah, exactly. So then everybody has to disperse and go do their own individual thing.
Right.
So like Jessica
it
Chastain...
It separates them all for quite a long time.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain goes back to her childhood apartment. If you saw the teaser trailer of this movie, you've seen the bulk of that scene.
Yes.
And then another kid goes off and does another thing. And then another kid goes off and does another thing.
And there are six of them.
And you're thinking like, oh,
seven
man.
Of them.
Well, there's five of them.
Well,
anyway.
How many?
Anyway, but it becomes that thing where you're like checking, like, okay, well, three down, two to go. Because rather than edit them together, it becomes this person, then this person, then that. And so that puts a real like, ooh, this is a 3-hour movie, isn't it? You know? I was kind of disengaged for a lot of this film. There are moments that are scary, and there are moments of character things that are interesting in terms of this being a grand scale metaphor about trauma and childhood trauma and how it affects you as an adult and how do you deal with it as an adult and whether or not you deal with it as an adult and all that stuff. And the book has its own pluses and minuses. I read it
decades
ago, so I don't really remember what those are. But yeah, I didn't come out of this as enthusiastic as I had been about the first It. And we'll get to the gay stuff in a second, but you do.
Well, I think there's a lot to like.
Sure.
The creature design is crazy and wonderful and disgusting. And there's a lot of creature and monster stuff going on here.
And even just little subtle sort of CG tricks. Like there's a moment where Pennywise is floating with an upside down pyramid of red balloons.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that is cool.
So I'm really into all the creatures, the monsters, the effects.
Mm-hmm. The drool.
I wish, however, that the emotional content were stronger.
Yeah.
This film had the opportunity to connect the line between childhood trauma and adult trauma and make the case, the very real case,
mm-hmm.
that when you grow up, no matter what bad thing happened to you as a kid,
you have to face it down all over again.
You have to live with it forever.
Hmm.
You don't get to eradicate it.
Hmm.
You don't get to kill it. You are, unfortunately, as a human being, cursed might be the wrong word, but
you have to accommodate it within yourself.
You have to accommodate it. It's going to always be part of you. I remember thinking that when I became an adult, that all the crappy things that happened to me in my childhood, after I had sufficient therapy,
mm-hmm.
that was going to be enough. Guess what, everybody? Well, that just ain't so.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep dealing with your stuff.
Mm-hmm. You don't let it define you, but it doesn't get magic erased, you know.
And part of the faulty logic of this story, at least as seen in the film, I don't know how the book handles it, but is that kill the monster and you're free.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. And even if that were real, even if that were the case in real life, if you could, you know, figure out what the key was, the secret was, you fix that secret and you'd be fine. Even if that were the case, the film doesn't really do a great job of making you feel like the urgency that these adults have to, other than the fact that they have to get the stuff and remember the thing and kill the monster.
Uh-huh.
I should have been moved by this horror film. And that's something that is possible to do, but it did not happen for me. And I think that the reason it did not happen for me is because it is such a mechanical story. It becomes a go to the place, get the thing, kill the bad entity. And that is a numbing effect sets in. It's repetitive. And the adult actors are not given enough material to flesh out their characters so that you care. So it just simply becomes this exercise in repetition. I shouldn't have been checking my phone as much as I did to see what time it was, because at one point I did check it and I thought, oh, there's an hour and 15 minutes left in this movie. What's going to happen?
And I'm sure the filmmakers would argue, oh, well, we don't just kill the monster. It's about their attitude about the monster and how they make it go away.
I understand that.
But even that, whether on a metaphorical level or on an actual sort of narrative dramatic level, not super satisfying either way.
I think there were a couple adults who might have been a little miscast.
That's fair.
Isaiah Mustafa did not have a lot going on.
He has, I mean...
And the New Zealand guy, Jay Ryan, same.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the reason I think that I thought that Jay Ryan was like three other people was because, like, he has a sort of kind of blandly, like, he could have been Finn Wittrock, you know, he could have been, right, like, Sam Worthington, like, he's yeah, there's not a lot popping there. And Isaiah Mustafa, I mean, from those Old Spice ads, we're not bringing that up as a diss. Like, he was genuinely funny.
Genuinely funny. So he's a comic actor, and let him be in some comedies.
And here he is stuck sort of being the exposition guy.
Right.
Like, he's practically directing the traffic of this movie.
Yes,
and there's not much for him to really latch onto. Anyway,
there is another problem with the connectivity between these adults.
Yeah,
they are so quite often separated from each other.
Yeah,
that when they get together in a scene, they're not having meaningful conversations. They're shouting over each other. Mm. It's a very loud movie, and they are always yelling at each other, And not one person. It's not like I speak, then you speak, then you speak. It's all
it's the Goonies for grown-ups.
I did think that as I watched it. I thought this is like watching the Goonies. They're just like shouting at each other.
Somebody on Twitter tried to make the case that the first It was Stand By Me but scary, and that this one is The Big Chill but scary. And it's
conceptually, sure.
Yes, absolutely. Right. But not that I'm even going to super defend The Big Chill, but it, like, there's not nearly enough meat on these bones as far as their interpersonal relationships and that kind of thing.
For a film that takes itself so dreadfully seriously, mm-hmm, as this, and expects you to roll with it for its entire running time. Because don't come to me and say, oh, you don't like long movies. Well, I'll see that. I'll raise you a Lav Diaz. How about that?
Tell it to Jean Dielman.
Yeah. I want you to keep me going. I want you to keep me engaged.
Yeah.
Bill Hader carries the whole thing. When he's on screen, he's in charge. He's the one you're paying attention to.
He is magnetic.
And I wish that the other characters had been as dynamic.
Yeah. And then this is what we'll vaguely allude to. There is a character in this film who is gay that isn't gay in the book, and that's fine. But the information presented about this is done in such a weirdly subtle and veiled way that it's like watching a 1938 movie where they're trying to get it past the production code.
Yes.
It's kind of like, okay, if I'm paying really close attention to these vague statements and to these actions that aren't fully spelled out, I suppose it all comes together. I bet you there are a lot of like moviegoers who are going to come out of this movie and have completely missed that.
I spoke to a queer friend today who said, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Were you not following the clues? Because I followed the clues pretty well for me, because I'm usually a big idiot in films that expect me to, you know,
Piece together
things. Yeah. But I followed the clues and thought to myself about halfway through, oh, wait, is blah, 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 is this what's happening? Yeah. And this queer friend said, you're kidding me. I missed this entirely.
And this is a movie that has no problem being very blunt about the fact that, like, you know, Jessica Chastain's character was sexually abused by her father.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or that super graphic gay bashing at the beginning. Right. So I don't know why suddenly this becomes the moment to, like,
speak
in code.
I think that this is, I'm going to assign a bit of cynicism to the production.
Okay.
I think that this kind of thing is sometimes used to score points.
Oh, like the guy in Avengers Endgame
Yes,
in the therapy
but
group?
not to have it have to weigh anything
Anything.
in the film. It
And
has
to be easily removable for China.
no bearing on the action
True.
at all. No
Yeah.
bearing on the story.
You could dub your way around it if you wanted to.
And if you tell me that it does have a bearing on the story, then I will tell you that they didn't do it strongly enough to
Yes.
make that count.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's going to be so subtle that most people won't get it.
Like J.J. Abrams had some tweet about
Maybe
how
not most, but some people won't get it.
J.J. Abrams had some tweet about how there were going to be gay characters introduced into the Star Wars universe, and somebody
Yeah.
else responded with, "I look forward to the 3.5 second shoulder touch that can be cut for China and Russia."
And then finally, can we have more Native American representation in cinema that doesn't make every single Native American person a mystical, supernatural conveyor belt?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of that in the plot of
Oh,
this. And
there's
I was
more
like,
in the
wait a
book. There's
second.
more in the book, and it's nuttier in the book. So they at least dialed it down for the film. But,
How magical do movies want to make Native American characters? I'm all for powerful ones,
sure.
but does everything have to be like, you came to our burial ground and you must take the talisman and
Yeah.
and now we're going
Don't
to,
squeeze the shaman, huh?
yeah, it's I'm not going to say that I'm insulted on their behalf, but if and I were Native American, I would be insulted by
I
this.
would be rolling my eyes pretty hard, yeah.
So anyway, there are elements of this film that I feel worked, and a lot that did not, and I'm glad that I had my own tea and my muffin to see me through it. That is all.
I should have brought my own tea too.
Yeah, maybe if you'd brought your own tea,
It would have been a whole nother
it might have
thing.
been better for you. Yeah. I want to know all about Venice. Tell me, what is your field report from the Venice Film Festival
Okay.
of Europe, Italy?
Well, again, if you want to read all my reviews from Venice,
And you do, you want to read all of his reviews. You want to go to the
all
Wrap. You
over at
want
the
to
Wrap.
click on those links.
That's Thewrap
Send the traffic Alonso Duralde's
dot
way.
com. Yes, click me, ladies and gentlemen.
I hear that there are people who are mildly unhappy with you about your review of Joker.
There are, and guess how many of those people have seen it? That would be zero. Now, I wrote a mixed
I
review of
wonder if any of
Joker.
the ones who hate you for your review are listening to us right now.
I can't imagine. And if they are, welcome.
If that's you, welcome. Go to hell.
I mean, no, seriously.
You leave my man alone.
I wrote a mixed review. Other critics had much harsher things to say about it.
Sure.
But I think what happened is I gave it a green splat and not a juicy red tomato, and that was enough. That's what the level of people who came after me, probably that's all that mattered to them.
I mean, okay, yes. Do I appreciate the $10,000 check from Marvel that I cashed yesterday and that I'm spending on a whole room full of Hummel figurines?
Yes,
Yes,
that narrative
I'm
has
into it.
returned on the
Thanks,
internet.
Marvel, for
Yes.
all that cash.
I love the people.
Nickels, nickels, nickels.
I
That
love the
sweet, sweet
people
sound.
who accuse critics of being in the pocket of Big Disney, who are shilling for Big AT&T Time Warner. Like, you know what? They're all corporations. They're all evil. And sometimes they make good movies. Sometimes they make bad movies. And it just turns out that Marvel is doing a better job at this at the moment than DC is. But it doesn't mean that I didn't like Shazam or Wonder Woman, or that I'm not interested in, this Birds of Prey movie. So everybody calm down. Anyway, so Joker is a movie that is wearing its references on its sleeve.
Okay.
Like, it's funny. Like, I've heard
When does it
people
open?
October 4th.
Oh, so you got it like 5 weeks ahead of
Yeah, this was the premiere. All right. That Todd Phillips apparently really pushed Warner Brothers that he wanted a screening competition, which in retrospect was a brilliant idea because they won the Golden Lion.
Okay, cool. Is that the top prize?
That is the top prize.
Okay, great. Good for Joker. You won the Golden Lion.
Hooray.
Todd Phillips made a really great documentary in the 90s called Hate It.
Yes.
About G.G. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
It's repulsive. You should see it.
Then he made a documentary about fraternities that got picked up by HBO, and then they found out that he'd actually staged a bunch of it, and they canceled the offer,
and
the movie was never seen again. I don't remember.
Interesting.
But that was like a big controversy. And then he became super successful with movies like Old School and The Hangover.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, this movie is, I've heard people refer to, like, Taxi Driver as a God's Angry Man story.
Right.
And years ago at Sundance, I saw a film actually called God's Angry Man.
Right.
And it was not good. And this is a movie that is very, very, like, steeped in its Scorsese things. Right. Down to the casting, not only is Arthur Fleck, the Joaquin Phoenix character, presented as a Travis Bickle type, you know, loner who is becoming further dissociated from his own sanity and from society at large, but right. He also has aspirations of being a comic and is obsessed with a late night talk show host who is played in this film by Robert De Niro.
So it's the king of comedy.
Yeah. My original headline for the rap was Joaquin Phoenix is the Travis Bickle of Rupert Pupkins.
Where's the Sandra Bernhard character?
Sadly, there is not one. They could have used one.
Yeah, you always want her. You know, always know. Get her.
This
yeah.
movie needs a Masha. If it had been played by Sandra Bernhard, so much the better. But it is, they lay on the kind of 1970s New York grime, although it's Gotham City.
Right.
That grime is put together really well. I think, you know, the set design and the art direction and all that stuff is good. You know, Joaquin Phoenix is giving a performance that I am not personally in love with, but I get it, and it fits what they're all trying to do here. Like, it is exactly the performance that Todd Phillips wants for this movie.
Okay.
So, like, he is delivering on that front, and a lot of people, I'm sure, will love it and be moved by it. I found it excessively showy.
All right.
It's one of those things where, like, you never forget that you're watching an actor acting.
Okay.
But that can work. That can be effective in some contexts, you know. I didn't love it. But the movie, I think, kind of, you know, I'm not going to be one of those sort of tut-tutting, you know, oh, it's going to lead to violence, because that's, I think, a nonsense argument about art in general.
Yes, it is.
And I'm not going to go down that path. I think that the sin of this movie is that it's politically vague.
Oh, I see.
I think that it goes off in so many directions about, you know, what we're supposed to make of this character, what we're supposed to make of his circumstances and his choices, and what he is driven to and by whom.
Right.
That I think anybody on any, you know, realm of the political spectrum can pull a thing out of this movie and be like, ah, well, it's really this or it's really this. And so I think ultimately that means it's not really about anything. You know, it's not really, yeah. It's not really making a case for anything. I admire the fact that they are trying to do an adult drama, but still in the world of DC Comics. You know, mm-hmm. It is Gotham City. The Wayne family does figure into the plot.
Right.
Yeah, but
is Batman here?
Bruce Wayne is in the film, but very young. So he's not Batman yet.
You're not Batman yet. Okay.
Thomas Wayne is still alive. Thomas Wayne is a key figure in this film. He is possibly running for mayor of Gotham City.
I see.
And he has a history with Phoenix's mother, who is played by Frances Conroy, who is, of course, great. Frances Conroy, who you interviewed once.
I did interview her once. It was great. Then we went to a thrift store together.
Yes. And because Phoenix is going so big, there's a really good cast of character actors who get to go smaller.
Right.
So you've got Frances Conroy, you've got Zazie Beetz, Bill Camp, you know, like people like that. Ultimately, I'm just kind of not impressed. Like, this is a movie that really wants to blow you away with, you know, its bold choices.
Okay.
And I'm kind of like, I've seen it all, Joker. I've seen this.
I will see it when it opens, and I will come back and tell you all if he's right.
You know, I don't begrudge people who admire this movie or like this movie. It just didn't. I didn't think it was anything particularly, you know, different.
Right.
For all of its effort, of its obvious desire to be something different. The opening night film was the new Hirokazu Koreeda, called The Truth, with Catherine Deneuve and Juliette Binoche, and it was yummy and just French. It's his first non-Japanese film, like non-shot in Japan, not in the Japanese language.
Right. Is it in French?
It is in French.
Okay.
And but it's great. It is about families, and it's about, you know, the truth and the nature of the truth and what we.
It's called The Truth.
It's called The Truth.
Okay.
What, you know, Deneuve plays an aging actress who has just written her memoirs, and she has called her memoirs The Truth.
Oh, well.
And Juliette Binoche is her daughter, and she's like, not exactly.
Oh,
you know?
I guess they could play mother and daughter, couldn't they?
Yeah, totally.
I never thought about that.
In fact, and Ludivine Sagnier pops up at one point as another actress
things over on the
who
table
also
here.
Played Deneuve's daughter in Eight Women. Do you have it together? Do we need to pause?
No, I got it together. It's all right now.
Fine.
I'm better now.
Anyway, it's a relationship movie, and it's about, you know, it's sort of about the truths we tell ourselves and that we demand from other people, and whether or not those two things, you know, overlap well. Really good performances.
When's that coming out?
Later this year. I think IFC has it. Ethan Hawke is in it as well. Yeah, so I like that quite a bit. I was really surprised by The King, which did not, at first glance, appear to be all that appealing. It's from David Michaud, who did Animal Kingdom, which I liked, and War Machine, which I did not. And it stars Timothée Chalamet in this sort of, you know, what I did not realize before I went in is basically he's playing Henry V.
Okay.
Although it's a spin on Henry V that is not entirely historical and not entirely Shakespeare either. Co-written by Michaud and Joel Edgerton, and Edgerton plays Falstaff. And it's not as boisterous a Falstaff as, like, you know, Orson Welles.
Right.
But it is the loosest I think I've ever seen Joel Edgerton be in a movie.
Okay.
A lot less uptight than I think he often is on camera.
Uh-huh.
And Chalamet, at first I thought, oh God, this is weird casting. He's so, like, wrong for this. But then I realized that the movie is saying, no, he's wrong at the beginning of the movie, but by the end of the movie he isn't, which is the sort of Prince Hal trajectory,
mm-hmm.
that he goes from somebody who shouldn't be king to someone who can be king. And there's, like, really sort of big, like, the Battle of Hotspur is really, you know, rousing and violent and you know, kinetic, but it also then very smartly spins to be about a movie about, like, what is the point of war, who's really benefiting from war, you know, from, like, an economic standpoint. So it sort of eats its cake and has it too.
Right.
And Robert Pattinson as the Dauphin is hilarious, doing this bananas French accent that is, like, two steps away from John Cleese in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and he's totally committing to it.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So both that and my favorite film that I saw in Venice, which is Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, those are both coming to Netflix. Marriage Story stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. It might be based on Baumbach's experience in breaking up with Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Right.
But, you know, Adam Driver plays a New York theater director. He's married to Scarlett Johansson, who has acted in his theater company for years. But she grew up in L.A. She had done some movies before coming to New York. When they get divorced, she and her son go to LA, and that, of course, then complicates the eventual divorce proceedings, which get more and more knotty as these things do.
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Okay.
There's a parade.
But naughty.
No, naughty. There's a parade of...
When do we see the naughty?
of high-pressure divorce lawyers, played by, like, Laura Dern and Ray Liotta, a somewhat mellow woman played by Alan Alda.
Ray Liotta, cool.
Ray Liotta's so good in this. This is, like, one of the best
things. Ray Liotta.
This is one of the meatier things I've seen him do since, what, B-movie? I can't remember.
Oh, have you ever watched the Jennifer Lopez cop show?
Oh, I did not watch Blue...
He's the gay cop?
Yeah,
The closeted gay cop.
It's not Blue Bloods. What's it called?
I forget.
A patch of blue something. Blue something. Anyway.
Blue Velvet.
Yes. Blue Velvet, the series. It is so good and so insightfully written. And Driver and Johansson are amazing in it. And it just has like... It's one of those things, you know, there's a reference in the movie to Scenes from a Marriage, and you don't roll your eyes at it because it's akin to Scenes from a Marriage.
Right, right.
In terms of just the sort of emotional honesty and nakedness of it. It's great. And I know
when
people...
When does this open?
Or
is it going to be for Netflix?
Well, it's both. There's several Netflix movies that are getting theatrical, and then...
This one and The Irishman...
This one and The Irishman, and I think The Laundromat, which I hated.
Okay.
And probably The King as well.
Was that also at Venice, The Laundromat?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Do you want to wait on The Laundromat and talk about it when it...
We'll talk about it when it comes out. If you can go read my review at The Wrap and find out why.
Would you also like to wait on the Roman Polanski and Nate Parker films?
I'll talk about the Polanski because I don't know if it's going to get a U.S. distributor.
Last one did not.
Yeah, it won the Silver Lion.
The Grand Jury Prize.
Basically, yeah. Okay. There's the Golden Lion, which is the top prize.
So he lost.
There's two Silver Lions, one which is the Grand Jury Prize and one which is Best Director. He did not win Best Director.
Right.
He won the other one. It's weird. I kind of went into this festival thinking like, oh, you know...
I have to?
Well, first of all, do I have to? And then also, like, what if I like the new Polanski? I have to talk about how I like the new Polanski.
Right, right.
And Polanski made it easier on me because I did not like the new Polanski. I found it really kind of stiff.
It's
in Europe, it's called J'accuse. The English title is An Officer and a Spy.
Okay.
And it is about the Dreyfus Affair. And you would think, okay, well, if Polanski's doing the Dreyfus Affair, then he's going to put some sort of spin on it. He's going to do something that makes it not just sort of another stuffy period piece. It is entirely a stuffy period piece. And even though it is a movie that is about, like, suspicion and paranoia and anti-Semitism and, you know, being under surveillance...
Which are common themes over the course of Roman Polanski's
career. Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You would think, oh, well, you know, he's going to ratchet up the suspense. He's going to give us this tension or dread or something.
Right.
He doesn't.
Okay.
It's dull. And that's kind of shocking because it's like, it's one thing to say, really, Polanski, you're going to make a movie now at this stage in your career about the Dreyfus Affair? Like, you're this poor victim of the media or whatever, we can, that's a discussion to be had, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you're going to make it this...
Is it even a discussion to be had anymore? Is there more discussion that has to happen about this man?
I don't know.
Like,
Europe certainly thinks so.
And that is a thing that I do not understand about Europe.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That, you know, this man who fled from a trial that he was to stand for a crime that he did commit.
Yes.
Whose films, some of his films have been, you know, amazing.
Yeah.
Historically important to cinema.
Yes.
And, you know, rightfully considered to be the classics that they are.
Yes.
He also committed this terrible crime.
Yes.
And I'm not sure I understand why he is still making films.
He's got backers.
If this gets an American distributor, I will not be watching it. I will not be seeing it. I'm done with him. And it took me a while to get to that place because I always felt like, for a long time, I felt like it was my responsibility to review his films, mm-hmm. in spite of how I felt about him. But I've changed my mind about him, and I no longer feel like I have to participate in what he makes.
I was ambivalent about it. I was basically told that that we needed to review it. And I was like, all right. And I did go in with the expectation of like, there is a strong possibility that I'm going to like this movie and I'm going to have to defend this movie aesthetically.
Right.
But you know, that was not an option.
Right.
That was not a problem anyway. And I would say the same for the Nate Parker, you know, say what you will about his past and what, you know, he has been legally exonerated of, but
yes,
questions remain about, and right, people have things to say about it. He has made a terrible, terrible film.
Well, he made a terrible first film, too.
This one's worse.
Okay.
Like, there were some things you could hang your hat on The Birth of a Nation and be like, okay, well, that's a cool idea,
right, or
this is an interesting take. This movie is... American Skin is the name of it, and Spike Lee is presenting the hell out of it.
Oh, okay.
Like, he was next to Nate Parker.
Is he the producer?
I think he came on board at the end.
Okay.
Like, it's a presented by. But, I mean, he was like, he got it into Venice. He was sat next to Nate Parker at the press conference in Venice.
Right.
He did the Q&A with Nate Parker after the premiere in Venice.
Okay.
Spike Lee was even sitting in the press screening that I attended.
Interesting.
He's, like, really, like, waving the flag of this film, really trying to rehabilitate Nate Parker's career.
That's his choice.
The narrative of which is now like, I was tone deaf 4 years ago and I should have handled it better.
Okay.
You know, anyway, so if we're separating the art from the artist, the art is rotten in this case. This is a clunky, obvious, just like occasionally embarrassing movie. Where Nate Parker plays a guy whose teenage son was shot by a police officer whose unarmed teenage son was shot by a police officer in a traffic stop.
Right.
A student filmmaker is making a documentary about the Parker character. They find out the grand jury is not going to indict the police officer. The Parker character, who is a veteran, gets other vets together, and they basically get a bunch of guns and they take the whole police station hostage and they force the officer who shot his son to face trial. They like have a courtroom happening in the hostage situation.
Okay.
It is badly written. You know, it's, you're supposed to be thinking that everything you're watching is the footage of a student film, which is supposed to, I guess, excuse a certain level of like low budgetness or amateurish camera setups, but it doesn't even like stick to its own formula that way. Like, ostensibly there are two cameras in there, and there are definitely some scenes in there where there had to have been multiple ones in the edit, you know? So it's like, they don't even commit to the bit. There are some really bad performances, with the main exception, I'd say, being Bokeem Woodbine as a fellow veteran.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. Some of us were saying afterwards, like, was Spike Lee in there so we would not laugh out loud? Because there were moments where I know I was biting.
Why would it have mattered if you had laughed out loud if Spike Lee were in the audience with you? Why would it matter?
I don't know. To be polite.
Spike Lee didn't make this movie.
I know, but he's...
So why would you... I wouldn't... Listen, if he's sitting next to me and he's responsible for a movie that is laughably bad, I'm going to sit next to Spike Lee and I'm going to say, ha ha ha.
Well, you're a braver man than I. I exchanged some looks
by with people. By the way, I loved Inside Man.
Big Crooklyn fan here. Don't get me wrong.
We love Crooklyn.
So yeah, anyway, most of these movies are going to open. We'll talk about them when they come out, and you get a chance to see them.
And a dude called you Pedro Almodovar on the street.
A dude called me Pedro Almodovar on the street.
Now, was it a grown man like you, or was it like some Euro twink that's trying to steal you away from me?
Oh, no. He was like in his 70s.
And he called you Almodovar.
Yes. And I kind of turned and gave him a look, and he kind of like smiled, and I was like,
does he think that you were
that's the thing. I couldn't tell if he was kidding or if he was flirting or what.
It was a very odd exchange. He was flirting with you. Come on.
Look,
I see you with your pretty face walking down the street. You know, I'm going to go.
I'll take it over the usual George
hey, good
Lucas.
What's your name? Is your name Pedro Almodovar? Would you like to go for a Cafe.
Because, you know, I get the George Lucas because I have a beard and I wear glasses and I have plaid shirts
Idiots
on.
Idiots who call you George Lucas have earned nothing but my wrath. This dude was smart because he at least got the nationality correct.
Right. And Almodovar was in town. He won the... like a.
So this is an old guy who just thought you really were Pedro Almodovar.
It's quite possible, yes. They gave their like career achievement lions to Almodovar and to Julie Andrews.
Did anyone think you were Julie Andrews?
Not that I know of.
Well,
although I did go around dressed like Mary Poppins.
So I had a wonderful day at the Lemley Royal while you were gone.
Okay.
It was Labor Day weekend, and if anyone ever goes to the movies on Labor Day weekend, you know the secret. And the secret is no one else is going to the movies on Labor Day weekend. And it's a wonderful experience. You don't just get a theater mostly to yourself. You get the concession stand to yourself. You name it.
That's why, yeah, when a movie opens Labor Day weekend, it's kind of like, oh... Okay.
So
that's why they opened The Fanatic.
friend Robbie drove on up to the city
mm-hmm.
from his suburban home. And we went to see Olivia. Now, if you haven't heard of this, it's because it is a French film from 1951 from a filmmaker named Jacqueline Audry.
Oh, a woman directed this?
Yes.
Wow.
And I don't know. Really anything about her other than this film. But she had a career in France, and I'm going to be...
And I only say wow because this is the 1950s, not because, ooh, women can direct movies.
No, yes, of course. We understand.
Well, first-time listeners, I'm going to be...
If you're new... Yeah, okay. In any case, I got the senior discount ticket.
You're so proud of this.
I'm so happy. I bought my ticket. Guy goes, that'll be $11. I said, okay. Thinking, oh, that's what the Lemley chain here in Los Angeles is, an art house chain. And as I figured, oh, that's the matinee price, you know, $11. That seems normal. Robbie buys his ticket. It's $14. Robbie says, why is mine 14 and his 11? And the ticket guy goes, I gave him the senior discount. I pumped both my fists into the air like Rocky. And I said, yes! Much more loudly than I said it just now. Because we were alone. It was just us. So I could yell as loudly as I wanted, and I did. And I think I startled the ticket man.
You're supposed to want to pass for older when you're 17.
I'm going to get the senior discount every single time from now on. Oh, it's happening. $3 off the ticket price.
How old are you supposed
I
to be?
I saved $3.
How old are you supposed to be to get the senior discount, Dave?
62.
How old are you, Dave?
55.
And you are proud of being
but
thought
I look
of as...
every inch of 62 years old.
You're so mature.
I look it. People look at me and they say, what a foxy 62-year-old he is.
What a sexagenarian.
What a sexy senior he is.
I'm
62,
this
looking so fine. Give him a $3 discount. He's going straight to the Paletas place next door and get a watermelon. Sorry, sandia.
There you go.
Paleta.
This director did the non-musical version of Gigi in France in 1949.
Yes.
She directed the feature film of... No Exit.
Right.
Of Sartre's No Exit.
So this is a movie about a young English teenager who is 19th century France.
Mm-hmm.
She is going to a finishing school in France. And when she gets there, she's immediately in love with the place and immediately smitten with the headmistress, Mademoiselle Julie. Mm. Well, this doesn't sit well with the other headmistress, Mademoiselle Cara, who is prone to fainting spells and dramatics and, you know...
Is it because she's into Julie or she's into the French, into the English girl?
Petulant behavior. It's because every young woman and teacher at the school is a lesbian. And I'm joking, they are not, but some of them are. and they take the homosocial aspects of this place and ramp them up. So it's a fever. And what a fever it is. For a film made in 1951, there is so much beautifully, extravagantly coded queer sexuality going on that you wonder how audiences reacted at the time. And we know that for its American release, it was heavily edited and censored and retitled to the title, The Pit of Loneliness.
Well, you know what that's a play on.
Yes.
There was a famous lesbian novel called The Well of Loneliness. Yes. Well, interesting because, you know, Machen in Uniform, which is sort of the kind of the mother superior of this sort of movie, was remade in Mexico in 1951 and then again in Germany or Austria in 1958. So there was something in the air about, like, repressed lesbian schoolgirls in the 1950s.
This is absolutely the kind of film that if you were a young queer woman in the 50s and you saw this, you would most likely become obsessed with it. Mm. I could see myself becoming obsessed with it. It's that cool, but also that corseted, if that makes sense. And
a lot of ripe and ready to burst sort of...
And, you know, quivering and ecstatic sighs and people like...
Longing.
Young girls like getting the touch or the glance they want and then having to support themselves with a wall or a statue because they might pass out.
Well, because they're literally corseted and they can't breathe.
Well, there is also that. It is... there's no open lustfulness, but what's under the surface
longer
is palpable.
Wow.
It's such an unusual and just, you know, ripe movie that it's about to get a DVD Blu-ray release.
Oh, good.
It got a restoration for this limited theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
And what a wild, you know, yet also incredibly prim and 19th century story. I love it. I love it. It's very cool.
I want to check that out. We actually screened the Mexican Machen in Uniform at Outfest a couple of years ago. It's been fairly hard to find, and I don't know if anybody's planning to release it on video, but the parts that I saw of it were very... novella-ish. It's sort of pitched at that level.
Yeah. No, I get it. So, hey, you guys, here's an advertisement. It's for us.
Yes.
I'm going to tell it all to you right now. We have a thing. We have a Patreon.
We do.
You subscribe to that Patreon at any level you choose, beginning at $1 per month up to $16 or perhaps even $20 per month. When I say even perhaps $20 per month, what I'm saying is that there's a limited number of people that we allow to subscribe at $20 per month because those people get a lot of things in the mail that require me going to the post office a lot. So we've capped that.
But, you know, if somebody drops out, there's a slot opens.
Yes, so hover like vultures. In any case, at the different levels, you get different things. You get different podcasts about TV, about food, about current events, you know, in the world and our ridiculous thoughts about them.
Yes.
You get items, mugs, T-shirts, Christmas tree ornaments,
enamel pins,
badges, and the magnets. And we have so many things.
Yeah. Monthly hangout club meetings where we watch a movie together on Netflix and do a Google Hangout.
A daily cultural recommendation mm-hmm. that we do called LKRX that is for the people who are at $1 a month or any and above.
At the higher levels, you get you can custom make a podcast for yourself called Private Knife where we'll go for 20 minutes on a topic of your choosing.
But here's the most important thing right now. We're doing a little promotion. Our friend, Karen Tongson, who formerly of the Pop Rocket podcast and currently of the podcast called Waiting to Exhale, which is about Gen X pop culture, she wrote a book about Karen Carpenter, and the book is called Why Karen Carpenter Matters. And you actually don't really even need to know much about Karen Carpenter to be into this book. It's a short book that's part memoir, part story of Karen Carpenter's career and life, part queer theory.
Cultural analysis.
Yeah, it's such a cool book, and we have copies that we are giving away to people who join or upgrade at the $16 level.
Now, before you say how many are left, right before we started taping, we had another upgrade.
Did we?
We did.
Well, we got a couple left then, still. So what that means is what you need to do to get your book and to upgrade...
Your autographed book.
It's autographed, too, by Karen. Not Carpenter.
Tongson.
Karen Tongson, who was named for Karen Carpenter.
Yes, I know.
By her musician mother.
Yes.
All right. You need to email me, personally. Email me. My email is dlelandwhite1964@gmail.com. That is DLELANDWHITE. Leland is my middle name. Such a nice middle name.
It is.
DLelandwhite1964@gmail.com. You email me and you say, hey, Dave, I want to be a person who joins at $16. Or, hey, Dave, I am a person who is already right now at the $4 or $7 or $12 level or the $1 level or whatever, and I want to upgrade to $16. Do I get a book? And then I will write you back and tell you if you are getting a book, because we have about two or three left, I think. And I don't want to, like, you know, disappoint you. So you email me first. And when I say, yeah, you get a book, then go ahead and upgrade. So do it. That's the promotion. That's Patreon, the ad for Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Do you have a DVD pick?
So many damn movies this week. I haven't even thought about my DVD pick. No, I don't have a DVD pick.
I thought of one as you were talking about Olivia. It is another French movie from a somewhat more contemporary vintage and bolder in its portrayals of cloistered, literally cloistered, all-female worlds. And that would be Jacques Rivette's The Nun.
Oh, yeah.
La Religieuse, which was unavailable on U.S. home video for a long time and is now on a new Blu-ray.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, Rivette's The Nun. Check it out. It's real good.
So we've been going a little long, so I'm going to read our new five-star reviews, and we'll get to the letters.
Okay, we had some letters last week from because of my trip to Venice. We made the shows that are normally available only to our Patreon people, LKTV, Linoleum Knife and Fork, Linoleum Nights, available to the general public. So they're all there on our iTunes feed if you want to go back and listen to them if you missed them before.
The sound's a little wonky because we had a channel problem, but
it's fixed now.
I think we fixed it.
We hope it's
fixed. This episode. I hope.
But anyway, so if you want to go back and check out those episodes, we have some letters about those episodes, which we'll get to next week.
Yeah, but there's an LKTV that anyone can listen to. There's a Linoleum Knife and Fork that anyone can listen to. And there's a non-profanity Linoleum Nights.
Yes.
Because Linoleum Nights is the one where we let it fly.
Yeah. The one we put on iTunes is...
I use all my favorite... F swears.
Is squeaky clean, so you can enjoy it with kids in the car or whatever.
Yeah. Here are the reviews that we got this week.
Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we will read it on the show.
This one is for... This one is from... I don't have names.
Why don't you put your glasses on, Grandpa? It's on there. It's in small print.
Oh, Elisa. All it took was putting on my glasses.
Senior discount.
In a world of a million podcasts about movies, this one is my favorite. A perfect balance of insightful movie commentary, inane banter. Inane?
Hey!
And updates about Dave's cooking exploits, which is true. Although I didn't talk about any cooking today, I just talked about
tea.
And I could go on about that forever.
You could.
Treesap says, or Treesap P, I don't know. I'm an avid listener and Patreon subscriber, yet I still can't get enough.
Oh.
Linoleum Knife. The hosts are fun, funny, and give intelligent and nuanced takes on every film. David Alonso's taste differs enough to give you a good range of reactions to every film. Plus, they just seem great. And it's fun to listen. Pro tip, get on Patreon. All their podcasts bring me light and joy throughout the week.
That's very sweet.
Thank you, Teresa P. Are we great in real life? Like actual great
I think
in
we
person?
Seem
on a
great.
Day-to-day? We
seem is great. The important word there.
Hufflepuff Panda says, smart info. Let me start that again.
Talky words.
Smart film insights. Charming banter. Now see, isn't that a better way to describe our banter than inane, Elisa? Think about what you've done.
She left us a 5-star review. That's what matters.
True. Charming banter and news about movies I might not have otherwise known about. I want these guys to be my uncles. In a different world, we could be your uncles. But I got to tell you something. We are uncles to about
24 people.
39 people. And I'm not exaggerating.
No,
that.
It's true.
There are how many now?
On my side, it's something like 20. And on
my
yours,
side, there's a lot, too.
There's a bunch.
So you have to take a number.
It's like being at the $20 level.
Right.
We don't have room for it right now. But check back.
But in a perfect world, we would love to be.
Sure.
Yes. Okay. Someone who has named a series of emojis. Heart, 2, and then there's like a Hershey's kiss. Is it a poop? Is that the little tiny version of the poop emoji?
Love to poop? I don't know.
Is it love to poop? Is that sure?
I mean, sure, we all do.
I'm going to say this is a Hershey's kiss. Love to Hershey's kiss.
Love to kiss.
Love to kiss the Hershey's kiss.
Love the chocolate kiss.
Okay. But I really do hope it's love to poop.
Hey, look, you gotta own your pleasures.
Everyone really does love to do that.
It's better than not.
I first learned about this podcast from a WD-40 can on Instagram a few years ago. My Instagram profile picture is a can of WD-40.
Still, to this day.
Yeah. I was instantly drawn in by the sultry voices.
No.
And witty banter. See, Elisa, there's another word you could have used.
We inspire
charming,
we inspire a range witty. Of feedback. It's fine.
They also share their opinions on current movies sometimes. The movie reviews are incredibly insightful and very balanced between Dave and Alonso's personal tastes and interests. The podcast brought me into the world of professional movie reviews, which is something I had not paid much attention to before. Thank you, and never stop. Also, I'm done reading the reviews. I got a shout out to the person that I met at Karen Tongson's book event at the last bookstore.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I was there picking up all the books that we were going to, give out to people. And it was an event where Karen was, as they say in the museums, in conversation.
Yes.
With Louis Vertel.
Yes.
Our friend and friend of the show, has been on the show many times, and is the co-host of Keep It with Ira Madison. And so he was talking to Karen, discussing the book, and all these folks were there. Including Donut, Chris Robles, and Alexei.
Oh!
They had come down to the city to see this
I'm
thing.
I'm sorry I missed them.
So I got to see them. But afterwards, I was talking to Lewis and complaining about the AC, the air conditioning in the last bookstore, which is a very large space.
Insufficiently air-cooled.
Much like the seats at the at the Cinerama Dome. The air conditioning at the last bookstore is not fat man friendly. And I was sweating. We were talking, and a young woman came up and was sort of like standing by us, like waiting to ask us something or speak. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, okay, well, she wants to talk to Lewis about this or that. And she did. She said to Lewis, "I love Keep It. I'm so glad to be here tonight." And then she turns to me and she goes, "And I love Linoleum Knife." And I was like, "What?"
The deuce, you say.
I said, "I'm shocked that you even know who we are." She told me her name. And of course, because I'm a crazy person who was sweating and very uncomfortable, I immediately forgot her name. And I'm terribly sorry about that. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Mystery Lady.
For coming up to me and telling me that you listen to us. If anyone lives in Los Angeles or visits Los Angeles and you see me out in the wild, and you are nervous about coming up to me and telling me that you like us, don't be nervous. I mean, don't be a murderer. I would like it if you were not a murderer.
But that's your boundary.
Otherwise, I'm thrilled when people come up to me in public because it's absolutely shocking every time it happens. It happened once at the Grove. It's happened twice at the Grove. In the movie theater, yes. Once was an employee mm-hmm. who knew who we were, and then a woman at a screening mm-hmm. Walked up to me and was like, "I love Linoleum Knife," and I was like, "That's crazy." I'm always thrilled and excited.
No,
when people come up and talk to me in public, and it's happened, I'd say a handful of times over the past, you know, 9 years.
I get it a little more just because I do on-camera stuff.
Right, right.
By the way, I feel like I should just sort of throw this out there because it sort of astonishes me to what extent this remains an unknown thing. If you were a fan of What the Flick, it is now Breakfast All Day. If you go to Breakfast All Day to our YouTube channel or to the podcast,
now,
right. It's me, it's Christy, it is Matt Atchity. Sometimes it's Ben Mankiewicz when he's in town. But we are still doing our thing. We've been doing it for a year now because it's been a year since we were canceled.
Y'all got canceled by Twitter's cancel culture.
Exactly. No, but I mean, you know, it was a year ago. We were canceled by our former employers, but the band has stayed together and we are still doing reviews every week. So But people came up to me at Outfest, like, "Oh, I miss What the Flick." I'm like, "Great. Do you know about Breakfast All Day?" "What? No." So word is not getting out the way I would have liked. So anyway, if you were a What the Flick fan and wondered what happened to us and if we're still around or if you miss us, please check out Breakfast All Day. We're still doing our thing.
As we have been recording this, a listener, Nathan, contacted both of us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And said, "I really want to know A. Duralde and D. Leland White's thoughts via Linoleum Cast about the Alex Billington embargo open letter." And I tweeted back to him and I said, "I don't really care about any of this." and he responded with Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park GIF that said, "Well, there it is." Thanks, Nathan. But it's true. I don't actually give one.
Well, you don't go to film festivals.
I don't give one flying heck about any of it. But okay. Yeah. I don't go to film festivals. But while you were gone, I had to go to a press screening for a film that required me to adhere to an embargo and sign an NDA when I got there.
Yeah.
So. It's just a thing that you do or you don't do.
And the screenings,
whatever
the screenings that are being discussed here at Venice in particular, but at other festivals are screenings for the press. And as such, I don't see why, as you say, a lot of regular movies that we go to, we have to adhere to an embargo. I don't see why a press screening at a festival would be any different. Once a public screening has happened, yes, obviously. Anything that is ticketed and open to the public, then it's Katie bar the door.
Right.
But if you've gotten the privilege of getting to see something early, then you have to adhere to the responsibilities and requirements of the people who showed it to you.
Yes.
That's it.
So this open letter is like, I've got cookies to bake. Honestly.
Yeah.
I've got cookies to bake. I just don't. I don't need this taking up time in my beautiful mind. All right?
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, hey, thank you for listening. Again, our Patreon page is patreon.com/linoleumknife. And also go check out our friends on the internet. Go check out christylemire.com. Listen to the Bibbs and Whitney podcasts, Canceled Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed. And the other one, I always forget what it's called, but they'll tell you. The one where they watch all the best picture nominees. You
know, right.
That would be easy enough to remember. And of course, you know, all the other lovely stuff over at the Schmoes No Network.
Do you know you know who else has new episodes up?
Who?
Fruit Bowl.
Ah.
Our friend David Quantic.
Yes.
Has a podcast that's about gay sex.
I was saying, it is as explicit as that this show is clean.
It is the most explicit and not safe for work thing, or your children in the car, that you could listen to. But it's a cool podcast.
Yeah.
And they have a little trouble promoting it on certain social media
apparently
platforms.
Facebook is flagging them as inappropriate.
They shut them
or
down all the
yeah.
time. Yeah.
So yes, if you are of a mind to check that out. Also, I discovered a podcast that I had not heard before. Called The Empty Bowl, which is co-hosted by Justin McElroy.
Different from the Fruit Bowl.
Very much so, but while we're talking about bowls. And it's all about breakfast cereal.
You've been talking about this for 2 weeks now, and I'm going to start
listening. It's going to blow your mind.
Because you know how much I love breakfast cereal.
I know.
As I said earlier, I bought a big box of Lucky Charms when we were gone.
Yeah.
Put it in a giant Jethro Bodine bowl. Ate that whole damn thing.
You will really like The Empty Bowl, I think.
Yeah.
Check out, visit Dennis Hensley. Sorry, Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley can't talk today. The Comics Canon, The Sewers of Paris, the Deck the Hallmark, Secretly Timid, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts, and do leave us one of those beautiful 5-star reviews, and we will read it on the show, as we did just now. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Spotify and Stitcher and TheLounge.com and Google Play. You can follow us on the social medias at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Get updates.
You're LinoleumCast on Instagram. D. Leland White on Instagram.
The show is LinoleumCast on Instagram.
Right, but you know, with me, there's bonus content.
Fine. You can also go to D. Leland White on Instagram or Twitter and
Linoleum
see what...
LinoleumCast is really just you.
See what Dave is battling about.
Yeah.
Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. You can keep up with his great stuff over at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get caught up on letters next week. We have some interesting ones to get through.
And I've seen a couple other films that we haven't talked about yet. I saw Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Brittany Runs a Marathon.
Oh, cool. Well,
so we'll
circle back
week.
To those next week.
As
we're,
well.
We're running long. But thank you all for listening. It's been a delight. And until next time.
Goodbye.